difficulty connecting. So we're going to give it 5 more minutes. If she's not connected, then we'll get one of the other members to chair the meeting whilst we vote on chairperson. Thank you.
I think we need to start. My apologies.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chairperson.
Morning, Chairperson.
How's everyone?
Da, Dayanduna.
Eh, who Becky?
Eh, I know. But I mean, Iboche.
Atiambiman.
Eh.
I hope everyone is okay. Are you all okay, good people?
Yes,
and Happy New Year. This is our first meeting.
Hi, Chairperson. Siyaphila, unjani wena?
Hey, Mkalipi, man. Long time. How are you?
Hey, I'm fine, Chairperson. Hey.
My apologies. I was... Yeah, I can see you, Honorable Adem.
Yes,
you are
okay.
No, I'm
going there soon. We're just waiting for the vaccine, Chair. We're alive and kicking.
Oh, that's lovely.
Look at you. I can see you're alive and kicking, Becky.
Yes. Okay. Patiently waiting for the vaccine.
The compost of ANC, bringing expired things to South Africa. You,
Nina. Hey, we're resting. Now I can see we are.
I won't carry it. Out of order, what was the regalia of your organization in the meeting of the committee?
Oh, let me check. Chair.
I will join you maybe after 30 minutes. As the doctor,
okay, fine. Your apologies noted, Honorable Tou.
Okay, in the spirit of note, Chair, at 10, I have to go to a TP's forum. I'll come back when I'm done, Chair. Then.
Okay, your apologies noted because we need to adopt the minutes. You and Honorable Tou must come back for the quorum issue. Then let me take this opportunity to welcome all of you. I'm reliably informed that we have got new members in this committee. We have got new members from the DA. You'll recall when we finished, Honorable Hussein told us that there's been changes in the composition of their committee. And then also, then I should think from the DA, the names that were given to me, I'm subject to correction. There is Honorable Mandinkosi Mabika, if maybe he's a member of parliament, majority of you might know him. If then I can't, let me check if he can switch on his video so that those of you who might have not seen him can see him, because it's possible for some of you. Then also there's Honorable Elene Spice. I see she's here. I can see her.
Chairperson, just a correction. It's Peace.
It was Peace. Sorry, my apologies.
No problem, Chair. Thank you.
You know, the disadvantage of people who staying in places where there's no sea, you'll understand. Where there's no beaches. So I welcome Honorable Member. I'm informed also now that the leader of this committee, the shadow minister, if I'm not mistaken, will be now Honorable Bring. I've seen him. Welcome, Honorable Bring, in the new year.
Good morning.
Welcome. We miss you. I can see you are here. Honorable Kleza, you are welcome. I can see you were indicating to me that Chairperson, you didn't greet me. You are welcome. Happy New Year.
Thank you.
And then there was also a correspondent that came, I think, late in the evening, that read that we must note that there's a new MP for COCTAP Portfolio Committee with the name of Honorable Princess S.A. Buthelezi. She will be attending the PC tomorrow. She is replacing Honorable Inkosi Luthuli. I didn't see that ATC, but we want to welcome you, Princess Buthelezi. I can see you are here on the speaker. You're welcome. Yes, that's the apologies. So we must welcome all of you formally. I hope you are going to enjoy the colleagues that are from your parties might have told you this committee, we have got one collective objective to make sure that our institution of governance works. We hope and believe we are going to enjoy being here in the committee. Like I said, for the IFP, I didn't see the ATC, like in relation to the DA. So I hope with as when we progress, you'll be definitely be ATC so that we know that you are a member of this committee. But I want to welcome all of you. You're welcome. We're looking forward to a very fruitful working relationship. We all know that we are political parties where we ascribe to the manifestos of our various political parties. There's one thing that is also exciting. When we are meeting, Honorable Kaiser will always be reading, trying to show us what we are supposed to be doing. But nevertheless, as I said earlier, our objective is to, we have got a common understanding to make sure that our people get the services, our people are serviced by the institution that we do oversight on. I hope and believe that you are going to enjoy your stay in this committee. And I must say upfront, this committee is not about a political grandstanding. Yes, we are good because we might not think alike. But throughout our meeting, we've always maintained the mutual respect of each other as we understand our core mandate and the objective of why we are here. So I hope you are going to enjoy. Having said that, today we are, the DG is here, the DG of COCTA. She had initially sent an apology. She's here. She has withdrawn the apology. And I think we need to commend the ministry and the department because the minister had earlier sent the apology saying that she has got three items in the cabinet agenda that she's presenting today. Should they finish earlier, they are going to come to the meeting. I've noted the apology of Honorable Mkalipi and Honorable Kaiser that Honorable Cho is going to join us in the next 20 minutes and Honorable Mkalipi should leave the meeting and come back because we need to adopt the meeting. So, Siren, do you have another apology that I didn't note? Because there was another one, a very long one. I didn't know who was it coming from. You forget to tell me who's the author of the message. Can you deal with the other apologies on your side, if there's any?
Honorable Chair, it's Honorable Hadze. I'll also be leaving Chair and joining you again. I'll be joining SCOPA for SIU reports on PPE contracts. So I'd love to excuse and come back later.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thanks.
Thank you. Sure. Shireen, any other apologies?
Chairperson, morning members. There was an apology from the parliamentary law advisor that deals with the local government municipal structures amendment bill. She will be undergoing an operation this morning, but the state law advisor, Ms. Idla Arnold, that deals with that bill is in attendance.
Okay. Thank you. So we won't have a challenge. Thank you so much. Can I welcome the DG of Traditional Affairs and the team? I can see he's here. And then also to welcome our colleague, Dr. Ganyeza Twalo from Parliament Committee Section. I see she's also here. DG Williamson, I've already welcomed you, as I said, and the team. And any other person whom I didn't mention their names, but I think when I welcome the DGs, it means I'm also welcoming the official from the department. So welcome. I hope, colleagues, you have rested enough. Then we thought, because Parliament had training sessions the previous week and this week, we shouldn't bombard you with a lot of meetings. Also, the program has been sent to you, so you can see what we will be doing, dealing with in the next first quarter. But today we are considering the NCOP amendments to the customary initiation and the municipal structures amendment bills. Just for the sake of you, I think you will recall, colleagues, that this bill called the customary initiation bill, it responds to the ineffective regulation of initiation schools. That's the matter that the DM Mapela has been very much preoccupied with, including the lack of a national statute that deals with the customary practice of initiation comprehensively. This lack of a national legislative instrument has facilitated abuse of the customary practices and of initiation, resulting in needless death and serious bodily harm to the initiations. We've been just reactive to issues that will be happening at those schools. The processing of this customary initiation bill, if you recall, it started immediately after its tabling on Parliament on the 28th of February 2018. It means it's during the previous Parliament. Thereafter, the committee of the Fifth Parliament embarked on an extensive public participation process involving traveling across all the provinces that participate in customary initiation to hear oral submission, also receiving written inputs. So we find that there's been that compliance with the committee. Following the conclusion of the committee process, the National Assembly read the bill for the second time on the 4th of December 2018, and thereafter sent it to the National Council of Provinces for the concurrence in accordance with the procedure outlined in Section 676 of the Constitution. I'd ask the committee secretariat to send you the procedure so that you can be able to go through it. I hope by now, colleagues, you've gone through, you quite understand what needs to happen. Then what happened was that the bill lapsed with the dissolution of the Fifth Parliament in May 2019. Then the NCOP then revived it on the 17th of October and following its own extent last year, my apologies, 2020, and following its own extreme public participation process, adopted it with amendments on the 2nd of December 2020 and immediately referred it back to the committee for concurrence with the amendments. And I think we need to also commend our colleagues from the NCOP for them having prioritized this bill. Then when you look at the amendment of the Municipal Structures Act on the other end, it mostly emanates from the proposals of the IEC. I'm sorry, I've seen somebody with the logo of the IEC here, and we want to welcome you. So I'm trying to raise it. That's why they are here, because they are also the interested parties. So when you look at it, it mostly emanates from the proposal of the IEC to address the challenges experienced in the administration and the management of local government elections. The DCOC, SALGA, provincial government, and some municipal councils have also proposed amendments to the principal act with the view of promoting certainly on some matters and strengthening oversight and governance in municipalities. This processing of the structures amendment bill in parliament also commenced towards the end of the fifth parliament term, where the previous portfolio committee received and considered submissions from SALGA, the Municipal Demarcation Board, the Provincial Government of KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape and the Northern Cape, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, DCOC, as well as Free State and the Mpumalanga Provincial Caucus. This engagement also took place in November 2018. The National Assembly debated the bill on the 13th of February 2019 and thereafter referred it to the NCOP for the concurrence in terms of the procedures outlined in Section 76 of the Constitution. However, the bill lapsed with the dissolution of the Fifth Parliament as well in May 2019. The NCOP also has revived the bill on the 17th of October 2019 after conducting its own extensive public participation processes. The NCOP debated the bill on the 2nd of December 2020 and referred it back to the National Assembly with amendments for concurrence. That is the background, honorable colleagues, for today's deliberations on the NCOP amendments to the two bills. So what I will do, I'll propose that the Department of Traditional Affairs be the one that first starts DG Dipofa, then to make the presentation, and then we will take it from there. Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you very much, honorable members of the committee. Compliments of the new year to the members of the committee. As the secretariat assists us with loading the presentation, just to indicate, Chairperson, that the background has already been provided by yourself in terms of the processes that have been followed up to where we are today. So without wasting any time, with your permission, Chairperson, I'll ask our colleague, Dr. Rinaldi Bester, to take the committee through the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Who else is there? Maybe quickly introduce the team that you have brought along, DG.
The team that we have from the department, we've got our DDG, Meshogi Mokaladi. She's here with us. We have Dr. Rinaldi Bester, who is the chief director in the department. He's here. He'll be leading in the presentation. There's colleagues also from that section, Tricia. Tricia is here as well from the Department of Traditional Affairs. We also have colleagues from the National House of Traditional Leaders. The acting secretary, Mr. Sam Kandlela, is here as well in the meeting. And we then also have colleagues from the Ministry Office of the Deputy Minister who are here, and as well as our cabinet support staff. Clifford Mahajan is here. That's the team that is with us here today, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. The presentation is already on the screen.
Okay, Dr.
Good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable members and all colleagues that are online. Chairperson, thank you. You have already done the introduction basically to the presentation. So I'll make it short. We're just going to focus a little bit in this presentation on the content to give honorable members an idea of what the bill is really about. The overview is there on the screen at the moment. The scope of the presentation, we'll just look at the introduction. It's very important to take note of the policy that we previously had that resulted in the bill being drafted. Then we look at the objectives of the bill. The CIB stands for Custom Initiation Bill. A little bit about the content, consultations, financial implications, and then the conclusion. Honorable Chair and members, I think everybody's aware that the practice of initiation has been subject to a lot of abuse in recent years. It has resulted in the death of initiates, but also many of them have suffered serious bodily harm. One of the main reasons for this is the fact that there is currently ineffective regulation of the initiation schools. Honorable members will know that there's a lot of talk about illegal initiation schools, but the fact is that the legislation is absent at this stage at the national level. Now, there are existing legislation that deals with certain aspects of initiation, but what we have found during the research, especially with the provincial laws, except now for the new law, the relevant new law of the Eastern Cape, is that the application thereof is extremely limited. In other words, they only deal with one or two aspects of initiation. There seems to be a focus on male circumcision, while initiation is about a lot more than just male circumcision. Then on the next slide, Honorable Chair and members, the department conducted extensive research into custom initiation since 2009. And in fact, prior to 2009, there was research done by the National House of Traditional Leaders. All of this resulted in the development of a policy. Now, honorable members will see that this policy went to cabinet on a number of occasions, and it was finally approved in April 2016. And it was called the Policy on Customary Practice of Initiation in South Africa. But when cabinet approved it in April 2016, they also directed that the department must draft legislation based on the principles contained in the policy. And we therefore drafted the Custom Initiation Bill. It went to cabinet. They approved it. We published in the Government Gazette for comments. And it was then refined and approved by cabinet for tabling in Parliament on 28 February 2018, as Honorable Chair has already mentioned. Now, very briefly, the objectives of the bill. The objectives are to protect, promote, and regulate initiation. The main purpose of the bill is to provide acceptable norms and standards, something that is totally missing from a national perspective at this stage. And then also to provide for structures at both national and provincial levels that will take control of initiation and make sure that it takes place in a safe environment. Very important is that we provide for the protection of life, prevention of abuse, provide clarity on the responsibilities, roles and functions of a number of key role players that we will list later on in the presentation, and then also to make provision for the effective regulation of the schools as such. The bill has five chapters. Chapter one is dealing with general matters like definitions, the application of the bill. It's important to note that it deals with, or it will apply to all initiates, male and female, and irrespective of their age. Chapter one also provides the objectives of the bill, which is the protection of life, certain guiding principles aligned to the Bill of Rights, but also important, it has prohibitions. And the prohibitions refer to people whose names are listed in the National Child Protection Register and the National Register for Sex Offenders, just to name two. It means that any person whose name is listed in any of those registers may not be involved in initiation at all, whether at the initiation school or in any of the structures that the bill is providing for them. Then chapter two on the next slide, it deals with the oversight and coordinating structures. At national level, there will be a National Initiation Oversight Committee. In short, we refer to it as the NIOC. It will consist of not more than 13 persons representing the National House of Traditional Leaders. I think it's important to note, Chair and members, that on all these structures, our traditional leaders remain ultimately responsible and will take the lead as they are the custodians of this customary practice. There will also be a representative from the CLR Rights Commission, the Department of Traditional Affairs, South African Police Services, Health, Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, representatives from Sports, Arts and Culture, the National Prosecuting Authority, the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council. Now, those will be the standard members. And then if it is necessary, the minister may appoint two additional members for a specific purpose, and these people must be experts in anthropology, customs or customary law. The functions of the National Initiation Oversight Committee are just very briefly, if you read the bill, you will see there's a lot more, but we're just focusing on the most important ones perhaps, is of an oversight and monitoring nature. They must provide guidance to the provincial structures that are to be established in terms of this bill. They can conduct inspections and investigations, oversee initiation awareness campaigns, and then they have to operate an initiation hotline. The provision is then made, Chair, for Provincial Initiation Coordinating Committees, the PICCs. Now, in this case, the bill has three possibilities, and it all depends on whether they are traditional leaders or provincial houses in the particular province. So it tells, the bill will tell you how the PICC must be established in a province where you do have a provincial house, which are seven provinces. Then also in a province where there's no provincial house, but we do have recognized traditional leaders, which is Gauteng. And then the provinces where you don't have a provincial house and there are also no recognized traditional leaders, namely the Western Cape. So these PICCs will consist of between 9 and 11 members representing the traditional leaders. Then in the case of Gauteng and Western Cape, this will include the members of the National House, especially for the Western Cape where they do not have any recognized traditional leaders. In the case of Gauteng, there will be members of the National House as well as the two recognized traditional leaders that we do have in Gauteng. There will be representatives from provincial government, municipalities, emergency services, and then the particular traditional health practitioner of the province. I can just say on this point on emergency services, Honorable Chair and members, we will see when we get to the actual amendments that were affected by the NCOP, is that there was a definition added for emergency services to make it clear what it really refers to. Now, the functions of these provincial committees. This is where everything will happen, where the real control will take place. They have to consider the applications to hold initiation schools, register these schools, close these schools that are not compliant, but they must also develop criteria and requirements for initiation schools. They may conduct investigations, they have to develop manuals, especially manuals relating to the roles and the duties of your key role players like the principals, the surgeons, the caregivers, etc. They also have to report abuse of initiates to the police services. And then as an interim measure, they have to register traditional surgeons. There's another clause in the bill that tells us, towards the end of the bill, it tells us that this is an interim measure until such time as the relevant provisions of the Traditional Health Practitioners Act come into operation. If the PICC deems it necessary, they can appoint a technical support team. And this technical support team will consist of representatives from various departments. They can choose all of them or just one of them or two of them. They can also co-opt people from certain national departments. And they can only perform functions that may, as may be delegated to them by the PICC. Chapter 3 is about the roles, responsibilities and functions of role players. We didn't go in the presentation into the detail as to what exactly these role players' roles and responsibilities are, but just to list them here for purposes of the honorable members is It talks about the functions and the roles of government, the houses of traditional and Khoisan leaders. We have put and Khoisan in brackets there, Honorable Chair and members, because at the moment they are known as houses of traditional leaders. But in future, as from 1 April, when the Traditional Khoisan Leadership Act comes into operation, they will be known as houses of traditional and Khoisan leaders. It also deals with the roles and functions of traditional leaders as such, the principals and caregivers, the parents or the guardians, traditional surgeons, medical practitioners, and then, of course, SAPS and the National Prosecuting Authority. Chapter 4 deals with the schools as such. Important is to note that schools must be registered. So when you have a law in future that says the school must be registered, and you do find a school that is not registered, then of course that school can be referred to as an illegal initiation school. So we are legalizing initiation schools with the requirement that they must be registered. Of course, they must comply with the prescribed criteria. Now, important to note is that initiation seasons may not interfere or overlap with official school terms. This has been a challenge for especially the Department of Basic Education over many years, and it was important to address this in the bill. No initiate can be assaulted or abused under the guise of discipline. The statistics of initiates that have died, Honorable Chair and members, there are many initiates who have died because of assault, and not necessarily as the common understanding is because of male circumcision in the case of male initiation. There are many other reasons also. So yeah, they may not be assaulted or abused. Principals, they have the responsibility to ensure that there is water and sanitation for the initiates. And then the death of initiate must be reported and it must be investigated. And then the bill has a lot of detail about these reports and the investigations. Honorable Chair and members, most probably the most important provision clause in this bill is clause 28. It deals with consent, prohibitions, age and male circumcision where applicable. I've just highlighted the most important parts of this section, but it is really the crux of this bill. It states that initiation is a voluntary practice. No person can be forced or coerced to undergo initiation. Then an initiate can only attend an initiation school if all consent requirements have been complied with. And that person must have a medical certificate that declares him or her fit to undergo initiation. The minimum age of an initiate is 16. In other words, no person under the age of 16 may undergo initiation or go to an initiation school. When the person is between 16 and 18, then that person, as well as the parents and the guardian, must give consent. If the person is 18 and older, it means that person has reached the age of majority, then that person alone will have to give consent. Now, this bill is totally in line with the provisions of the Children's Act. And very important to note that the bill states clearly that you cannot give any consent in terms of this bill that may be seen as contradicting the provisions of the Children's Act. In clause 28, there's quite a number of references to the Children's Act where we as drafters made sure that the bill is totally aligned with the Children's Act. Male circumcision is also addressed in the bill where it concerns male initiates, and the bill states that it can only be done by a registered medical practitioner or by a traditional surgeon. But in the case of the traditional surgeon, that person must also be a registered medical practitioner. If the traditional surgeon is not a registered medical practitioner, then he can perform circumcision but under supervision of a medical practitioner. A person who forges any consent, which apparently also happens a lot in practice, will be guilty of an offense. And then, of course, you cannot give any consent for a person to attend a school that is not registered. Then on the next slide, chapter 5, this is the chapter that deals with your general matters, such as allowances. I'll come back to the allowances now. Offenses, appeals, regulations, monitoring, and provincial peculiarities. Now, on allowances, honorable members will see when we get to the financial implications, but I can actually mention it now. The members of the NIOC and the PICCs will be government officials or people or traditional leaders or other people who are public office bearers. In other words, they already receive salaries. So there will be no additional allowances or salaries paid to them for being members of these structures. But you will remember I mentioned earlier that there's this option of appointing two additional members to the NIOC if necessary. Now, if those people are not public office bearers or government officials, then they may be paid an allowance as determined by the minister. So it will only apply to those two particular people. Offences are quite strict. I think the government's approach is, Honourable Chair and Members, is that this bill really needs to, when it becomes law, surface a real deterrent for those people who are abusing the initiation practice at the moment. So just to mention one example, you can have, there can be a fifth, but this is a maximum sentence of 15 years imprisonment for holding of a non-registered initiation school. It's important to note that this bill in the offences clause does not replace your offences that are already provided for in your other laws, such as your Criminal Procedure Act and your Children's Act. And then if I can just speak on the last one, provincial peculiarities there. When this bill was drafted, we became aware that the Eastern Cape was also busy with a comprehensive piece of legislation based on the national policy that was approved. So we made provision for provincial peculiarities that say that where you do have this particular provincial legislation, this bill, when it commences, will not suspend the operation of that provincial law. However, there are certain exclusions in the particular clause of the bill where national norms and standards are set. In other words, that bill of the Eastern Cape, or that law, the new law of the Eastern Cape, can be applied and implemented for as long as it's not in contravention with certain provisions of the customer initiation bill. This will also, of course, apply to other provincial laws that may come in place. Chair, you have already mentioned the consultations that have been done, so I will not go into that on that particular slide. Then on the next slide about the financial implications, I already mentioned the issue of those additional members. Just to say that what the Department of Traditional Affairs and the provincial departments probably will have to make provision for is the normal travel and accommodation expenditure that will be that will relate to the work of the members of these committees during initiation seasons, especially when they have to go and do investigations. Chair, you already also mentioned the dates on which the National Assembly and the NCOP adopted these, the bill, and that it was referred back to the Portfolio Committee in terms of Rule 311. Just to close then, in terms of Rule 311 of the National Assembly rules, the Portfolio Committee has to prepare apparently a report and their recommendations on the council amendments. And then the committee is allowed to consult the select committee if needed, or the chairperson. But according to that rule, 3112A and B, the committee is not allowed to propose any further amendments to the bill. With that, Chair, this is the presentation in short. I'm not sure whether you also want me, Chair, to go into the actual amendments that we have highlighted in the D version.
Yes, that will assist a great deal if you do that. Remember, all of us were not part of the previous committee. We are all new in this committee. It will assist us a great deal. Do that, please.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll ask Shireen or Angela, I'm not sure who's doing it, just to put the highlighted version on the screen.
Shireen, are we on course?
Yes, Chair, I'll light the bulb.
Chair, if it's in order, while she's lighting it, I can start maybe by making a general comment on the amendments that were made to the definitions clause, clause one, if that's in order with you.
Yes, that would be appreciated to save time, right?
Thank you, Chair. Chair and Honourable Members, at the time when this bill was drafted and submitted to Parliament, the Traditional Khoisan Leadership Act was also still in process. It was actually at its last stages of the parliamentary processes. So what you will find is in the definitions of the Customer Initiation Bill, especially where we refer to traditional leadership institutions or positions, that it refers to the definition as it appears in the Traditional Leadership and Governance Framework Act of 2003, the one that everybody knows as the Framework Act. But this Framework Act will be repealed by the Traditional Khoisan Leadership Act when the letter comes into operation on 1 April. So what we have done, together with the state law advisors and the parliamentary legal advisor, and of course with the approval of the NCLP Select Committee, all those particular definitions we have amended so that they can cater for both instances. In other words, for the current situation where we still have the Framework Act, but also for the coming situation where you have the Traditional Khoisan Leadership Act coming into operation. Thank you, Serene. Honorable Chair and members, during the everything that's highlighted is what is new. It has been inserted by the Select Committee, although there's one or two things that we highlighted where there's no insertion, but I will explain what has been taken away there. During the discussions by the Select Committee, there was a lot of comments that were received from the provinces as to the issue of abuse, that we should have a definition for abuse and not limit it. Now, at the time when the bill served in front of the committee, wherever we refer to abuse in the bill, it spoke about physical or mental abuse. So there was a strong feeling that it is limiting it. We should not limit it. We should rather remove the words physical or mental where it appears in the bill itself and then put in a definition, which we have done. So there's a new definition for abuse that says it includes, but it's not limited to physical or mental abuse, sexual abuse, any form of gender-based violence, and any harmful practice that initiates may be subjected to. So it's a more comprehensive definition of what abuse is. Then that one, Chair, about area of jurisdiction, you will see then what is added is that if you read it and it says it means this area of jurisdiction as it is defined in the Framework Act, prior to the repeal of that act by the TKLA is the Traditional Khoisan Leadership Act, or Section 65A of the TKLA once it commences. So this is what I was talking about in the beginning. It covers both. So if this bill, for example, would become law today, the definition covers it because it's in the Framework Act. If it becomes law after 1 April, then it's perfect because the definition covers the TKLA as well. Then on page 5, I referred to this earlier. There was a definition for emergency services that has been added. And the definition states it means any services needed as a response to an urgent, impending, or recurrent situation for which knowledgeable and expert intervention is required to ensure the welfare of initiates and any other person present at an initiation school. It's including but not limited to your emergency medical services, ambulance services, firefighting services, and of course also our disaster management services. Then if we go down a little bit on that same page, kingship or queenship council, as well as the next one for local house, those are both definitions that have been amended to make sure that it also covers the TKLA when it commences. Then on page 6, the definition of national house is the same kind of a technical amendment almost, the same with principal traditional council, same with provincial house. Then there's a new definition for standards for initiation school premises. Some of the comments that provinces submitted during the NCOP process was that the Department of Health, from time to time, issue standards for premises. And they also issued standards for initiation school premises. It's a little bit old, these standards. They were issued in 2015. And when we worked through them on the request of the Select Committee, we noticed that most of the content of those those initiation school premises standards are outdated. But there are still parts of it that are relevant. So there's a reference in clause 15 of the bill to the standards, and therefore we included a definition because the general person may not know where to find these standards. So this definition just simply takes you to the or explains where you can find it, which general notice it was, which government does it. Then there's a definition for the TKLA, the Traditional Khoisan Leadership Act, which was necessary to insert it because of all these other more technical changes to the definitions. The definition of traditional community, traditional council, and traditional leader are all the same kind of amendments as those that I referred to say we needed to make provision for the TKLA once it commences. Then on page, I think it's 7, what is highlighted there on top is all forms of abuse. Now, that is not what is new, but it used to say all forms of physical and mental abuse. So we removed the words physical and mental because it is now covered in the definition of abuse. Then subclause 4, the new part is paragraph C actually, but the A and B that honorable members see on screen used to be one clause. So you would read the whole thing as one sentence. But when the select committee, after their deliberations, requested the part C, it's now part C, to be added, we also used the opportunity then to split up the existing text. So what is new there is the fact that a caregiver, traditional surgeon or traditional health practitioner may only be involved in initiation practices if at least a period of 10 years has lapsed since that person graduated from initiation school himself or herself. This is to ensure that experienced people are involved in initiation schools and practices. The bottom part there, first subclause 7, the word gender or sexual orientation has been added. So what it says, this subclause is about discrimination. It says you may not discriminate against any person on the grounds of disability. That is what it initially said. So after the select committee deliberations, it was added, we added gender or sexual orientation. So you may not discriminate on any grounds of disability, gender or sexual orientation. Subclause 8, the whole subclause 8 is new. It says that every initiate has the right to confidentiality regarding his or her health status. And then B just confirms the fact that the medical certificate must be treated as confidential, the one that's issued by the practitioner, medical practitioner. However, in paragraph C, it's very important to state that notwithstanding the confidentiality, the initiate cannot use that confidentiality as an excuse for non-compliance with Section 22 of the bill. Now, Section 22 is the one that requires of initiates and their parents and guardians to disclose to the principal of the school if they do have certain serious illnesses or medical conditions that may result in them not being properly fit to undergo initiation. Then the next one is on page 8. This is about the composition of the National Initiation Oversight Committee. Initially, the bill said that it will include 2 members of the National House. This was changed by the Select Committee to 3. Then paragraph F there was basically a technical amendment. The bill did say Department of Women and Minister Responsible for Women. Remember, the bill was tabled in Parliament in 2018, and at the time, that was the portfolio of that department, which has since changed. So it's technical correction to reflect the correct name of the department. And then paragraph I is new, and it includes, it means a person of the representative of sports, arts and culture will also be a member of the NIOC. And then the paragraph J there is just a renumbering because the new I came in, the existing I had to become J, which is the same then in sub 4, where one I has changed to one J. Then in clause 5, it used to say that the NIOC must, at its first meeting after it has been established, elect a chairperson and a deputy chairperson. So the select committee pointed out, at the provinces actually pointed out that there should be clarity on who must convene and chair that very first meeting. So it was agreed that that first meeting will be chaired and convened by the minister, or then if the minister so directs, it can be chaired by the Director General. Then the next one, I think is on page 13. Yeah, there it is. Thanks, Shireen. This clause deals with the functions. This is clause 15 of the bill, and it deals with the functions of your provincial initiation coordinating committees. Now, the first word that's highlighted there in paragraph E is the availability. What the paragraph says is the PICC must determine the number of schools that can be held in a particular area. And when they do that, they must take into account quite a number of factors, like the proximity of the schools to one another, the availability of land and space, etc. And then it, that highlighted part used to say the provisioning of proper habitable structures. Now, that word provisioning was changed to availability, more a grammatical, perhaps, or better English than provisioning. And then what was added also is that was also taken into account the accessibility of the schools. Is it a school that you can get access to easily, or do you need a 4x4 to get there, or how do you get there? Then the next one, paragraph G, this relates to the definition that we inserted for standards of initiation school premises. So what the clause here says is that the PICC may develop criteria and requirements with which your initiation schools must comply, and they must then also take into account when they develop these criteria, they must take into account the standards for the school premises insofar as it's not inconsistent with this act. The next one is on page 18, at the bottom of page 18. Yeah, this is clause 21, and it deals with principals and caregivers, the roles of principals and caregivers. What sub-clause 10 makes provision for is that in the instance where you have a death of an initiate, then, excuse me, I'm at the wrong clause. What this one talks about is that in the instance where you have a person with a disability in a particular initiation school, you must make sure that the needs of that particular person is taken care of. And what was added is that those needs that you must take care of must include the provision of sign language practitioners and braille services where, of course, it is applicable. Then the next one, Honorable Chair and members, is on page 19. This is about parents, the roles and responsibility of your parents and the legal or custody guardian. All that this new insertion there says is that Honorable Members will remember that we said initiate must obtain a medical certificate that declares that person fit to undergo initiation. But what provinces have informed the select committee is that a person goes to Gauteng and get a certificate there from a medical practitioner, maybe a questionable certificate, and then they go attend an initiation school in the Eastern Cape or the Western Cape. So what this clause is now saying is that that medical practitioner who issues the certificate must be practicing within the province where the initiation school is to be located. That will make it easier for your PICC to control the issuing of medical certificates or perhaps to check on the validity, real validity thereof. Then on page 20, was it's about medical practitioners in subclause 2. What it used to say is that a medical practitioner, a male medical practitioner, may perform circumcision on any male initiate. But as was pointed out quite correctly by provinces, is when you do invite a medical practitioner to go to the initiation school and perform male circumcision, that medical practitioner is there for a very specific person or persons. So those words, the word any was replaced with the relevant. Next one is on page 23. Right on top there, yeah. There's a word that was inserted to say that no child or any person may be forced or coerced to undergo virginity testing as part of the initiation process. And the next one is on page 24 at the bottom. This is the one that I almost spoke about earlier. This is about the death of an initiate. And what the clause is saying is that in the case where the initiate dies, then the PICC and the principal must arrange for the remaining initiates to undergo counseling. What has been added is to say that this counseling can then also be provided to the parents or the guardians of the deceased initiate, but if they so request it. So in the case of the initiates, it will be compulsory, but in the case of the parents or custody guardian, it will be if they request such counseling. Then on page 25, right on top there in clause 32, this is technical amendments, Honorable Chair. It's the 41I, it used to be 41I, that has changed to 41J. This is because of that insertion in the NIOC of a new paragraph I, and the existing one became J. To the bottom of the page, clause 33 deals with offences. That particular one, any alleged offence relating to the abuse of initiates. Previously, there's nothing that was inserted there, but it's the same as with the previous, the mental, so those limitations were removed. So it just refers to abuse, and then with the definition of abuse, it's quite comprehensive. Every kind of abuse will be covered. Then on page 29, what's the last one? This is just a numbering. The bill said that it's called the Custom Initiation Act of 2018, so the NCOP changed it to 2020. Now we are in 2021. Honourable Chair and members, and I don't know, perhaps the parliamentary legal advisor can provide clarity on how this can be changed to 2021, but I suspect it may be just a technical exercise undertaken by Parliament. Honourable Chair, thank you. That is then the presentation, as well as all the amendments affected by the NCOP.
My apologies. Thank you so much. And maybe you are telling us that you've also been part of the processes of the NCOP. So there isn't much that we might think that maybe you didn't understand the intention of the other legislatures. Colleagues, I believe you have read the provisions of Section 76. But I can give you an opportunity to comment on the proposal by the NCOP. If there's anything, also if there are things that you want to ask clarity from, I think the colleagues from the state law advisors will also have to deal with the issue that Mr. Bester has said in relation to the 22 parliamentary legal advisor will advise in committee section, Dr. Twalo is here, on the issue of 2020 and 2021. But let me give you an opportunity now to raise issues that you want to raise in interaction with the presentation and the actual amendment bill that Mr. Besser was just screening now. Can I see a show of hands who wants to interact with the presentations? In the screen already, I've seen the end of Honorable Brink, Honorable Kawa, it's up in the raise your hand option. Those are the two hands, and then it will be Honorable Kaza, I can see you're showing your face here. Yeah? It will be the three of the colleagues. Is there anyone? And oh, you are still here, Scopa.
No, no, okay. I'm here. I'm covered.
You are covered?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm fully covered.
Oh, you are happy with the amendment?
Yes, very progressive.
Okay. Let me allow Honorable Brink, followed by Honorable Kawa, and then Honorable Kaza in that order. Honorable Brink, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. It would seem from the documents presented to the committee as well as the presentation that the changes proposed by the NCOP aren't far-reaching and fundamental in the sense that they don't change any of the important provisions. They only seek, it seems, on the advice of those who know, to deepen the protection of individual liberties and rights in respect of this initiation process. That is my impression from these documents and the presentation, and so we would not have objections to what the NCOP has proposed.
Thank you, Honorable Brink. Can I then allow Honorable Kala Mamkize?
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. Greeting to all of you colleagues and department of what is this? Department of Traditional Affairs. Chair, I'm not having any longer to speak today, but all I can say, Chairperson, this bill is very good and well. As much as they are saying, they are proposing this bill because they want to save lives of our youth. I fully support this bill, Chair. But also, Chair, I can say, those who were in other side, those who were having a initiative schools, illegal initiative school, Chair, we want to see in those investigation that was been take place in other years. We want to see the outcome of people who were making the loss of life of the youth previously, to take a full responsibility on this them being prosecuted because they were negligent about the lives of our youth. All in all, Chair, I can say this bill is good and I'm supporting it. And I'm still happy about the bill to intervene to those illegal initiation. Thank you, Chair.
Oh, Honorable Nava, you can lower your hand from the system so that we can then proceed. Thank you. Honorable Kleza. Honorable Kaiser.
I'm sure it's covered, Chair. Unless he's still consulting his notes.
I'm suspecting that he's still with something is
yes, I suspect. Respect, he's still consulting.
I think he has a network problem, Chair. He was complaining about struggling with the network.
Oh,
is he also in Free State province?
But Free State is loud and clear today. You can hear our whip so eloquently. So,
but it's
I
not
don't know what is your problem.
Me. The whip says, is her problem. It's not her, it's he.
So what do
you
do? I suggest, Chair, we adopt the and recommend for approval.
Okay. For tabling at the end.
Yes.
Then can we ask the state law advisor with regard to the issue that Mr. Besser has raised with regard to that last part of the 2020 and 2021. But that can be dealt with, ne?
Agreed.
No, let me ask them. Pumelelange, you are the one who wants to talk to it.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greetings to you and all the members and everybody present in the meeting. Chairperson, it is, as Dr. Bester pointed out, it is basically a technical edit that needs to be done because clearly the bill was attended to the whole of last year and we are now finalizing it, the final processes in 2021. Normally, an edit like that, though I'm going to confirm if it is necessary that we do an e-list with the bills office. As it is an edit, when the bills office is attending to the processes that takes the matter to the president, such corrections are normally done there. But I'm going to verify for certainty whether is it really necessary that we do the e-list, which in all likelihood, I don't believe it is necessary. As I said, it's a technical edit, which has nothing to do with the bill and the content of the bill. It's just the fact that the year lapsed before the bill was finalized with all its processes. But if need be, we will do it technically with the relevant office. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mumelele. It's much appreciated. There were concerns raised by Honorable Bridge. Can we get response from the Mr. Bester and the DG?
Chair, I didn't really have any concerns.
Okay. DG, do you have to comment on any inputs or you are fine as well?
I'm fine, Chair. I was just going to respond on the issue of Honorable Brink that he had said in my reading that he doesn't have concerns that he supports. I was standing on that issue.
Okay. Then can we then, in fact, I think we are all agreeing, but we just need to do it for the purpose of record. Can I get the mover and seconder for the adoption of
I move the adoption of the bill.
Then you'll be Honorable Kawa, seconded by who?
Hadebe with H.
With H.
Who's about to adjourn the meeting?
No, we are still giving another item.
Just pulling your lecture.
Other items as well. Okay, then I think then the committee section then will then submit the bill for the NA to the NA then under the circumstances. We have all agreed. We had the necessary quorum. Shirin, can you confirm that?
Yes, Chairperson, we do have a quorum.
Okay. So we sorted. The team from traditional affairs will be damn excited. Then we'll make sure that it gets sent to the NA as prescribed by the rules. Thank you, colleagues. We're starting the year on it, but that's what we normally do on a high note. Can we move then to the DG of cooperative governance? Cooperative governance. Introduce their team and tell us who's presenting, to tell us who's here. I see Dr. Naidu is busy, already is already loaded the presentation. Over to you, DG.
Okay, good morning, Honorable Chairperson and to all the honorable members. I am joined by the institutional development team. We have the acting DDG, Dr. Nkashe, and we also then have Dr. Kevin Naidu, who will be leading on the presentation. I'm also joined by Boitumelo Diale, who is the Chief Director in terms of citizen engagement, and with Coretta Makaza, and then Sipe Sile, Brian Ntuli, and Sia Kelly. And I also do have two people from my office, Honorable Chairperson. And as Honorable Chair had done the introduction in terms of the process and where we are in relation to the Municipal Structures Amendment Bill, I think, Chair, we can move straight into asking Dr. Naidoo to then present to us the amendments. And we are also hoping for a similar outcome from the earlier presentations. Thank you so much, Chair. And over to Dr. Naidoo, if that's okay with you.
Yes, as Dr. Naidoo is doing that, the IEC should say something after you, including Salga, if they're here. But Dr. Naidoo, proceed.
Good morning, and thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I gather I am audible and my screen is viewable. Chair?
Yes, you are. The presentation is here. We can hear you as well.
All right. Thank
you very much. Once you hear somebody saying that they normally have network challenges, like people of the First State, but it's okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. DG Dipofa, DG Williamson. So, Chair, you have already in your opening remarks dealt with the background to this bill. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it. Suffice to say that I'm going to give a high-level overview of the bill when it was discussed in the Portfolio Committee in 2018. And like the approach that was taken by our colleagues from DGA, to go to the D version of the bill and point to the changes that were made by the NCOP during our engagements there. So as indicated earlier, Chair, you know, the bill was informed initially by changes that the IEC had proposed to the department, which were informed by an evolution of elections that were held in the sector. And this slide indicates, you know, the number of by-elections that we've had over the various terms, and in some instances, you know, jumping by more than 10 times from one term to the next term. So we had then gone or received inputs from stakeholders to say that, you know, I think it would be also opportune to expand the amendments to the Structures Act by governance issues that we have. And therefore, the bill had morphed from dealing only with local government election related amendments to now dealing with.
Honorable Fleza, are you back now? Honorable Fleza, we'll give him an opportunity. I think the team from DTA shouldn't move if he had issues of concern. No, you are terribly having a network challenge. Shirin, can you call him and tell him that? But if there were issues that you wanted to raise or clarity-seeking question, I'll request the DTA team not to move out of the meeting until he's got a proper network, just for him to ask questions if he had questions on the other matter that we've already disposed of. Yes, but let's proceed. I'm sorry about that, Honorable Pleasant. No, I can't hear you. Proceed. I'm sorry about that interjection. Dr. Naidoo, you can continue.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. So this slide here indicates the various engagements that we've had at the time that the bill had entered into Parliament. In November of 2018, we had stakeholder presentations being made. The Portfolio Committee, as it is obliged to, has also requested submissions to be made through the media. And just over 53 weeks ago, we were in the portfolio, in the NCOP, in the Select Committee, presenting the bill to that committee. So post that engagement with the NCOP and the Select Committee, the bill was referred to provincial legislatures, we were lucky enough, Chair, to have had, you know, direct support to the Free State and Mpumalanga and Gauteng provincial legislatures, where we had gone out physically supporting the engagements that were held. And then for the remaining six provinces from May to August, we had to support the provincial legislatures through virtual platforms. We had engagements late last year to deal with issues relating to the negotiating mandates that we received from the provincial legislatures, the adoption of the C list and the D versions of the bill, to having them deal with the final mandates that were received from the provinces, and then considering an adoption of the D version of the bill by the select committee, and then the bill finally being referred back to the National Assembly on the 2nd of December for concurrence. So the bill is premised on three broad areas, and we've color-coded them to give the audience a view as to what exactly the amendment relates to. So the 32 clauses in the bill, when it left the, or when it entered the portfolio committee, dealt with matters of an electoral amendment, then amendments dealing with governance-related challenges in municipalities, and then thirdly, issues relating to more of a technical nature. So the next slide gives you a very high level summary of what each of these 32 clauses deal with. So you would see clauses 1 and 2 are of a technical nature. Clauses 3 to 8 are more of a governance-related area that the amendments deal with. And then clause 9 would deal with an electoral-related amendment. So when you look at the red font on this slide, it would indicate to the reader that these were the issues that the portfolio committee had attended to or further amended when the bill had gone to them. So for example, impact defined was a matter that the portfolio committee had sponsored during the engagement. The matter of the minimum of 15 councillors being changed to 10 was a matter that the portfolio committee had proposed in the engagement and which was accepted. If you look further there on that same block, you would see local being inserted in red. So local was not there when the bill had gone into parliament, but after engagement, we saw that it was necessary to include that so that the deviation of 20% is not extended to metropolitan municipalities and to district municipalities, because those municipalities would be greater than 20,000 square kilometers and would be eligible to deviate by 20%. So just to clarify it, we said it was just the local municipalities that could deviate by that number. So the next slides give you the same kind of rationale, but I'm not going to go into it, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, because I'm going to deal with it in a bit more detail in the ensuing slide. So this slide will indicate at the top there that it deals with clause 14, which is of a technical nature, and then clauses 15 to 20 are clauses of a governance-related challenge that it is addressing. So clauses 27 and 28 of an electoral-related nature. And then to go into the clauses itself. Honorable Chair and members, what we've done before going into the clause proper was to introduce it by giving you a problem statement. So clause 1, the challenge was that there are various dates that are considered by municipalities as to when a councillor assumes office after an election. So some municipalities over this 20-year period was taking the date of the election as the date when the councillor assumed office. Some municipalities took the date of publication of the results, and then some municipalities took the first council meeting as the date as to when a councillor took office. So to provide certainty, and for uniform application across all municipalities in the country, we said that the date of the publication of results by the IEC would be the date when a councillor assumes office. Clause 2, and on this slide, Chair and members, you would see a green block there, DCOG. So that block indicates the actual sponsor of the amendment. So DCOG sponsored that because DMAs have been withdrawn by the demarcation board, all reference to district management areas in the Structures Act will be removed because it is obsolete. So it's of a technical nature, and we've done this to basically clean up the act, so to speak. Clause 3, so there was a challenge in that there are various limitations with the plenary type of municipality, and hence this should be done away with. So this was sponsored by the department together with various provinces, and it has now become a technical nature in that we've removed all reference to plenary type municipalities in the Structures Act as we find them. So Clause 6 is also of a technical nature, giving effect to the removal of reference to district management areas. Clause 7, of a governance nature. And we said, to deepen democracy, there should be a minimum of 10 councillors in a municipality, translating to a minimum of 5 wards in a municipality. Now, this is informed by the fact that, you know, you have large, expansive municipalities, and sometimes due to the small number of registered voters, they do not have adequate number of councillors to represent communities. So to cure that, and this is mostly applicable in the Northern Cape province, we said that in instances where a local municipality is greater than 20,000 square kilometers, an MEC may deviate by no more than 20%, as opposed to the 10% which is presently provided in the law. So we did a quick scan. These 19 municipalities are the municipalities with less than 10 councillors in the country. And if we effect the 20%, they would be, having the minimum of 10. In the right column, you would see the grade of the municipality. And the question was put, so if you're going to be increasing the number of councillors and providing a minimum, wouldn't that have an impact on the remuneration bill of municipalities? And we said yes, albeit very minimal, because when it comes to grade one municipalities, you would know that the National Treasury builds into the equitable share a 90% subsidy, and a grade two municipality an 80% subsidy, and then a grade three municipality a 70% subsidy in respect of councillor remuneration. So those municipalities that are greater than 20,000 square kilometers, there's 9 such municipalities in the country. And if you take the first municipality, which is the largest, David Craper in the Northern Cape, 44,000 square kilometers. And if you apply the formula, you would get 30 councillors generated for that municipality. And in terms of the present deviation of 10%, that 30 could move to 33 councillors, translating to 17 wards, because you would round up 16.5 to 17. But if the 20% was in effect, you would get 30 councillors being deviated to 36, and then an increase of 3 councillors, but an increase of 1 ward, 18 being 50% of the 36. Just for information, the city of Johannesburg would be able to fit into David Craper local municipality 27 times, and Gauteng as a province 2.5 times into that local municipality. Clause 8 also deals with a governance-related matter, and it deals with councillors that are removed from office by an MEC for a breach of the code of conduct may immediately thereafter still become a councillor. So, and that has happened. There's case law that is available in this regard. And I think as recent as March, April of last year, there was a case where a councillor was removed from office and immediately thereafter was elevated to the top of the list of his party and was appointed back into council. So this provision provides that if a councillor is removed from office in the future, you would not be eligible for office as councillor for a period of 2 years. This is mostly of a technical nature, and it gives effect to the definition of the term declared elected. And this is in relation of metropolitan and local councils, and the same then for district council, so basically cross-referencing to the definition of declared elected, as well as secondly to deal with the matter of removal of reference to district management areas. Clause 11 is of an electoral nature, and the challenge was that it is not practical to proclaim an election within 14 days. And the IEC has relied on municipal managers defaulting and handing over this responsibility to the MEC, affording more time for participation and logistical preparation. So the ensuing clauses, as sponsored by the IEC, give effect to those challenges. Perhaps just to add that these electoral amendments are a practice that the IEC has adopted over years, the standard operating procedure that they've implemented when it comes to these challenges. So by including it in the legislation now, they're merely formalizing those standard operating procedures. Clause 12 deals with instructions from political parties regarding councillors having to vacate office comes from unauthorized sources. So in some instances, you would find more than one person giving instructions to municipalities as to a councillor that should be removed. So to cure that problem, the IEC has had sponsored a provision relating to authorized representatives, which was cross-referenced to the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act. And when I get to the D version of the bill, you will see that there were further announcements in this specific instance. Clause 13 also then deals with a governance-related matter. And the challenge that we have was that municipal operations are sometimes brought to a halt by the refusal of the speaker, acting speaker, or a municipal manager to convene a meeting of the council. So we've now sponsored a clause to say that a person that is designated by the MEC can call a meeting in instances where speaker, acting speaker, or municipal manager does not call that meeting. Section 29A is an import from the Systems Act, and it is included in this bill now to provide a better flow for matters relating to meetings. Clause 15 deals with the inconsistent application of determining the number of seats in a council when determining the quorum for holding of meetings. And then secondly, this clause deals with the present uncertainty as to when the presiding officer has a casting vote. So to cure the first problem, we said that when one determines a quorum in a municipality, the number that would be determined by the MEC prior to the commencement of a term of local government would be the number that the municipality would look at when determining the quorum. And secondly, and this gives effect to a constitutional court ruling around the casting vote of the presiding officer, so we're merely reading in the words in this section of the Act to say that a presiding officer may not have a casting vote when it comes to the passing of bylaws, the imposition of rates and taxes, raising of loans, etc. Clause 16, dealing with Section 36, is also of a technical nature and deals with now the abolition of the plenary type municipality. Clause 17 deals with strengthening or providing more functions for the Speaker of a Council, and we provide now for these four additional functions for the Speaker. Clause 18, you would know that municipalities presently have the Office of Work. We've now regularized that by providing for an entire section, new section in the bill that provides for the election of this office bearer, for the functions of the work, for his or her term of office, for the vacation of the office of removal, as well as for the of acting work. Goals, executive committees, which could sometimes be very time consuming and fraught with complexity. And secondly, there is no uniform formula for the composition of executive committees across all municipalities. So to cure this, we've said that there should now be a uniform formula across the country when it comes to composing the executive committee. And we've given a little scenario here where a municipality with 61 councillors made up of three parties that have 52 seats to 2 seats, and then other smaller parties making up the balance of 4. And as presently provided, the size of the exco should be 20% or no more than 10. And in this case, because 20% translates to 12 of 61, the exco would be set at 10. And the new formula would give you, so options 1 and options 2 could be any options, any of these two options that municipalities would presently be able to implement in their municipalities. The option that we're now providing has no quota, a simpler formula of the number of seats in the municipality that the party would have divided by the total number of councillors times the size of the exco. And that permutation at the bottom of the right-hand column would give you what parties A, B, C would be entitled to in terms of composing the executive committee. That was the first part of the challenge that we tried to cure. The second challenge was that, executive committees raised the challenge around, so the party would be eligible to have 3 seats, but then would be subjected to a further election in the council. And they felt that although the party would have decided on their 3 candidates that would make up the exco, the election that must be held in terms of the present provisions were time consuming because councils or other parties were not in support of certain members, although the party that nominated the 3, did so having full knowledge of why they wanted those 3 councillors. So rather than subjecting these 3 to a further election in the council, it was felt that we should replace elected with the word determined. So we would say that throughout the clause that we've now sponsored, which has also had consequential technical amendments, which were picked up by the NCOP Select Committee, were also being dealt with now in the D-Bowl. Clause 20 deals with the matter around the functions and powers of executive committees sponsored by SALGA. And we've now said that executive committees may only receive reports from Section 80 committees. So too with executive mayors and their functions and powers, and that the executive mayor is now only entitled to receive reports from Section 80 committees. Clause 22 deals with board committees, and presently there is no time frame for the establishment of such committees by municipalities. We've now put in a time frame of 120 days for these board committees to be established, unless circumstances show that such is not possible. Clause 23, so there is a need for all municipalities to establish oversight committees, and I think this is a matter that has been raised continuously for years now in terms of establishment of oversight committees, and more commonly known as municipal public accounts committees. So a new section 79 provides for the establishment of these committees, provides for specific functions of the committee. It outlaws office bearers from being a part of the committee, but importantly that, you know, reports of this committee must be submitted to the speaker, who must table such reports in the next meeting of the municipal council. So in instances in the past where these reports were not tabled for various reasons, a report of the impact must be tabled by the speaker in the next council meeting. So this deals with the participation of traditional leaders in municipal councils, and and the fact that this would be dealt with through the enactment of the TKLA referred to in the previous presentation, but it would stand until that act is operationalized. Clause 25 deals with the technical amendment relating to reference to district management areas. Clause 26 deals with the reference to the plenary type of municipality, which would be obsolete after the enactment of this amendment. Clause 27 is of an electoral nature, dealing with the seat allocation formula that was problematic in the past. Secondly, it deals with no time limits for parties to respond to multiple seats or insufficient seats. The current 7 days to report a councillor vacancy is sometimes problematic, and it has now been proposed that it is increased to 14. And changing the order of party lists at just any time on a candidate list is in conflict with the responsibilities of the chief electoral officer to certify a list of candidates. So these challenges have been cured in the amendments to clauses 27 in the main. Clause 28 deals with no time limits for parties to respond to multiple seats, as well as for insufficient seats, and then again changing the order at any time on a candidate list and the responsibilities of the chief electoral officer. So clause 28 unpacks those challenges that that the IEC was experiencing. Clause 29 is a mere amendment to now include WIP as part of all the other office bearers that I define in Schedule 3. So it falls amongst the rank of office bearers such as Mayor, Deputy Mayor, Executive Mayor, Deputy Executive Mayor, Speaker, MACOs, and EXCOs. Clause 30 deals with the Code of Conduct for Councillors, and basically two things that we try to deal with here in the main, that presently the Code of Conduct makes no provision to investigate a breach of the code when the speaker is the perpetrator, and that there is no requirement and time frame for the speaker to inform the MEC of the sanction applied for a breach of the code. The slide here deals with a flow in terms of how a breach of the code is dealt with, starting with if the speaker suspects a breach of the code, what he or she may do, and then leading up until to the bottom of the flow on the right-hand side at the bottom, that any action by the MEC taken must be in accordance with the rules of natural justice. Clause 31 deals with the repeal of laws. In this slide, and at the time that it went into the portfolio committee, it dealt with these two specific matters. You would see in the D version of the bill now we've included section 54 of the Systems Act. And then the last clause deals with the short title and commencement of the Act. So, Honourable Chairperson, without further ado, I'm going to go straight into the D version of the bill and indicate to the committee the changes that were made by the Select Committee in the NCOP. So what I've done is that in instances where there have been new additions to the bill, I've highlighted this in this light blue or bright blue color. So you would see in the long title, we've now provided for a transitional arrangement in respect of the plenary executive system, and to say that this could only change, and as you would see at the end of the bill, that this would only take effect coming from the new term of local government. We've included a new definition for authorized representative, and we say that this is in relation to a party means a natural person authorized by the party in accordance with its constitution to act on the party's behalf for purposes of performing the duties contemplated in section 7 and 43 of the Act. We've now imported from the Systems Act this definition of code of conduct. The yellow indicated here, so the part highlighted by the Electoral Commission was added by the Select Committee for Certainty. The definition of Local Government Municipal Finance Management Act has now been moved up here because it just makes it simpler and easier drafting in Section 79A, which deals with the Oversight Committees and the Municipal Public Accounts Committee. The bill, when it entered Parliament, had impact defined with all capital letters. So in terms of drafting conventions, the caps were lost, were dropped, and these are all small letters. So an amendment by the Select Committee of a technical nature to improve the drafting. So this too, and included so that it falls into the greater scheme of the amendments that have been effected. The 7 was changed to the 10. It was an oversight when the bill left the portfolio committee, so we rectified that together with the other or and the full stop being removed and the or being inserted. We've changed the word size to area because it correlates square kilometers. When the bill had left the Select Committee, these lines here, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, from 34 up until any deviation in terms of Section 24A, B or C must be done with the concurrence of the Minister, was not underlined. So it is of a technical nature that would be rectified, as would be another matter that I would point out later in the bill. This insertion here, so after code of conduct, it had for councillors contained in Schedule 7. So by virtue in the Act, it was felt obsolete to still have those words there, so it was removed from the bill. Code of conduct has been inserted here, and this is an import from Section 54 of the Systems Act. So this is just of a technical nature to provide the cross-referencing that the code of conduct is now actually in the Structures Act and no longer in the Systems Act. This too is also of a technical nature, and it is for certainty. So previously, the declaration of the results of an election stopped there. We've added these words there. So too, in this part of the clause as well, we added those words by the Electoral Commission. This is of a technical nature. We added the one there just so that it is in line with drafting conventions. We've removed four councillors set out in Schedule 7 for the explanation that I've given earlier. So because of the new definition of authorized representatives, in the bill that had gone to the portfolio committee originally, it had in the bill as defined in the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act. We've now, because of the definition that we provided upfront to fit in here, as well as to fit into the scheme of executive committees, we've removed reference to the Electoral Act. This clause here was to also improve the drafting, and we removed off the municipality, so it read the municipal manager of the municipality. We deleted those words, of the municipality, and moved the comma to after the word manager. This second one has also been to improve the drafting. So we removed on good cause shown, which was inserted here, and also inserted a comma after the word province. So this too is a repetition of cleaning up of the bill that we did, as we had done for other provisions relating to the code of conduct. So amendment of section 43, which deals with the composition of executive committees, indicated that we've replaced the word elect and elected with determined and determined. So this is all of consequential amendments to give effect to that amendment of changing the word elect to determined and determined. The insertion of this here through an authorized representative. So we're saying that members of an executive committee would be determined by an authorized representative of the party. So too, in this instance here, we've inserted the words through an authorized representative. These amendments that I've indicated in blue now are new clauses, because we've now aligned the executive committee determination with the rest of the bill around election being changed to determination and elect being changed to determine. So all of these clauses in the bill are of a technical nature. Amendment of section 63 of Act 117 of the Structures Act. So item 3. So item 3 was actually the incorrect reference and should actually have been item 4. And this was brought on by the Code of Conduct. So when the Code of Conduct was amended in the past, there was a 2A that was inserted immediately after item 2. So item 2A in the bill has become 3, and therefore the item 3 should actually have read item 4. So this amendment also is of a technical nature. Section 79A, also a drafting convention amendment. So originally the bill had Municipal Public Accounts Committee in capital letters. It has now been dropped to small letters. Here, in this instance, the word Municipal Public Accounts was inserted before the word committee. So too in this instance, in 79A3, a comma was inserted after Auditor General or between the L and the S. Small letters for Management Committee and Audit Committee. Now, this is in compliance with drafting, legislative drafting conventions. This provision has now been also improved, where we've taken out the 2003 Act 57 for the MFMA, because we've now, as I've indicated earlier, defined it up front. We've inserted this comma here after on its own initiative. In sub paragraph 4, we've included the words Municipal Public Accounts. We've dropped the capital letters for Audit Committee, and we've also removed 2003 from the original bill in this version of the bill. So in this amendment, we had the word seats here rather than votes, and we have rectified that in the select committee engagements. So the import of the Code of Conduct Schedule 1 from the Systems Act into the Structures Act now. And you would see that the 2A, so voting at meetings was in the previous Code of Conduct version a 2A, so 2A has become 3, and the reference that I mentioned earlier to item 4 was attendance at meetings. The further technical adjustment that we've made here is that we've moved the comma from after May to the word after not. So previously it read a councillor may comma, now we are saying a councillor may not without the permission of the municipal council, etc., etc. So an improvement in the drafting and the language. Item 15.3 previously had the word chairperson here. We've moved chairperson, we've replaced chairperson with the word speaker. In item 4B, we've included these words here now for certainty. A copy of the appeal must be provided to the council by the MEC. And lastly, around the Code of Conduct, we rectified item 6 to now read item 7, and this has been a consequence because of the 2A becoming 3, as I mentioned already. And we've replaced rules of natural justice with section 3 of the PAJA Act number 3 of 2000.
The CEO would have liked to have been here, since this would probably be the last interaction with the bill. But in the virtual space, he's basically sitting next door on the with a select committee at the NCLP dealing with the General Laws Electoral Amendment Bill. Dr. Naidoo has mentioned that the bill started out about 5-6 years, about more than 5 years ago, with the IEC initiating certain discussions around the challenges that they have experienced with by-elections as well as candidate nomination. And since then, obviously, the bill as it is now has grown, but I can safely say that we have been part of the entire process. Including the portfolio committee process, and after that having then gone to the NCLP, where we were also part of all of the public hearings, as well as coming back then to the select committee in terms of dealing with the provincial negotiating mandates. So we are all of the items, as Dr. Naidoo has pointed out, that relates to the electoral committee, electoral commission, my apologies, that we obviously not just only in support of it, but we can proudly say that we have also initiated. So we support all of those recommendations that have specific impact on the work that we have done. I would also just like to say that the proposals that we have made are all administrative challenges, and some of the proposals that we have made, it has already become practice because of this long period that we have taken to get to this point. As an example, we in the case of by-elections, all by-elections are already now proclaimed by MECs, because the 14 days just does not allow the Electoral Commission, for example, to get a voter's roll to a standard that it will be able to provide for us for free and fair election, especially since the Mhlophe Constitutional Court matter. So we look forward in anticipation that specifically with the local government elections, the general elections approaching fast, that at least for this election, we will then have the necessary legislative provisions in place to guide us through. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Mr. Abrams. Yes. Colleagues, can I see the colleagues who want to raise issues on the presentation? I see you started the queue, Honorable Branch, followed by Honorable Groenewald. Is it the only, yeah, is it the only two colleagues who want to, because on the system I only see Honorable Bring and then Honorable Groenewald raises and I could see him yet. Which one? Okay, if that is the case, in that order, Honorable Bring followed by Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. In the handling of the bill in the previous parliament, most of our objections were raised by my colleague, the Honourable Milam, who was then a member of the committee, in particular concerns about the cost implications of this, of making the minimum threshold of councillors. The first proposal is 15 and 10 is a much better proposal in that regard, as well as concerns about the powers of MEC and so on. But according to the rules, we are limited here today to discussing the amendments that were passed in the NCOP. And in that regard, and according to the information that was presented to us, there were no real fundamental changes made. Most of it were technical of nature and consequential amendments, amendments as a consequence of changes that had already been made when the bill had reached the NCOP. But if there is any fundamental consequences arising from the NCOP amendments that we have not picked up, I do ask that that be pointed to us. And I'm also eager to hear what colleagues have to say. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Brink. Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Groenewald, it's good to see you.
Same, Chair. Chairperson, there's only two questions I want to ask. And being a councillor for 8 years, I know the problems in terms of your impact. So it relates to the Section 79A. On Section 4, it says reports of the Municipal Public Accounts Committee must be submitted to the Speaker, who must table such report in the next meeting of the Municipal Council. We may just have some clarity there in stating that the report must be unchanged. We had situations in the past where impact reports goes to the Mayor and then the Executive Committee changed the report before it's being tabled to Council. So I'm just scared that if it's submitted to the Speaker, it comes changed to the Municipal Council. So we must just factor that in as well. And then in terms of Schedule 7, your Section 15.1, it reads that the Speaker of a Municipal Council on a reasonable suspicion of the opinion that the provision of the Code has been breached, the Speaker must. So the problem we had in Council is as soon as other councillor brings the misconduct of another councillor under the attention of the Speaker, the Speaker decides when to investigate and when not. So we must just make provision that the speaker isn't the only one that can decide when such breach must be investigated or not. So I would propose that just to put in there somehow that if another councillor lays a charge in terms of the breach of conduct, that it must be investigated as well. That will be my contributions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. I think the one highlight of this legislation on my part that is very exciting to me is this issue when a councillor is removed or the council is dissolved, then the same people won't come back. I think we need to commend the department and the team for bringing this part of the amendment. I think it's a milestone and it's a highlight. I think then maybe it will assist to bring stability. Also to thank the IEC, as they said, that it will go a way, long way with regard to the electoral process matters that they have raised. Do I have any comment, feedback from both the department and the IEC on the comments as made by the three of us? Thank you. Department, you'll start, then the IEC will follow.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think that the comments made are indeed invaluable, and we also appreciate those. Perhaps Dr. Naidu would like to then respond on some of the technical issues raised around Section 79A and Schedule 715. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Naidu. You are covered by what the DG said.
Yes, if I can respond, Honourable Chair.
Okay.
So Section 79A. So part of the implementation plan that we are considering post the bill being enacted is to provide clarity around implementation of these provisions in the bill. So if we look at the matter relating to impacts and the comment or the proposal / question from Honorable Kroonewald around reports being changed, in the first instance, that would immediately be irregular. And it would be something that we would point out in the accompanying implementation circular that we would issue once this bill is enacted. So that's the first thing. The second thing that was raised by Honorable Kroonewald was, you know, the possibility or the option of any councillor, any other councillor now being included as, you know, reporting a breach of the code. And I think our lawyers would probably need to come in here, Honorable Chair, to say that any amendments, and I think that would be quite a substantive kind of an amendment to the bill as it stands presently, and may not be, for lack of a better word, acceptable, or if it is, then it would be something that would be subjected to another process, and I think it is referred to as a mediation committee being set up. But I think our lawyers can, or the state law advisor could advise in that regard. But perhaps also the matter raised by Honorable Brink as to whether, you know, the more substantive matters that have been incorporated while the bill was at the Select Committee, and I can confirm that the matters that have been dealt with have been of a technical nature, more so to clean up the bill, so to speak, but also to comply with drafting conventions that are out there when dealing with matters of this nature. But perhaps on that point as well, the state law advisor could also just confirm that. Thirdly, the matter that you raised, Honourable Chairperson, around the removal of counsellor when the code of conduct is breached. And to say that this was a clause that received the most amount of airtime in all of the engagements that we've had. It has been a clause that has been really supported and welcomed and hailed by citizens, by political formations, parties, etc. So it is something that I personally also believe that would go a long way in trying to deal with some of the mischief that is out there. Chairperson, before I get off the platform, I want to also take the opportunity to, well, firstly, this is quite a milestone moment in that, the last bill that we've had coming through Parliament was 5-6 years ago. That was the Disaster Management Amendment, I think. But we had the Systems Bill 10 years ago. So this is quite a milestone moment. And there's so many people I would like to thank, especially Mr. Abrahams, who's been with us from day one, to all of these engagements. Salga, who's been there. Dr. Bester, who's been advising us in terms of how we should go about the NCOP engagements. My team, Honorable Chair, Mr. Nkeshli, Mr. Kumalo, Lucia Mputi, and Rishle Nkosi, they've all been there supporting, assisting to meet deadlines. Our ministry has been supporting us, but also the DG coming in at the last bit, she really made sure that we stick to the time frames and be prepared for these kinds of engagements. So thanks to everybody for making us arrive at this point. Thank you, Chairperson, to allow me that little space, but perhaps if the state law advisor can come in. Thank you so much.
Yes, state law advisor.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. Yes, as Dr. Naidu has pointed out, with regards to the content of the NCOP amendment, I can confirm that...
Miss Arnold, we can hear.
Hi, Chair, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, my apologies for my connection. I hope it will hold. I just wanted to confirm, as Dr. Naidu has pointed out, that the amendments coming from the NCOP are mainly technical in nature. The grammar has been corrected, as Dr. Naidu has illustrated in various clauses. There is nothing substantial that has been amended. And I have also spoken to the Parliamentary Law Advisor, Ms. Fatima Ibrahim, and she confirmed, and she's of the similar view, that the NCOP amendments are in the majority very technical. They clear up the bill. They provide clarity with regards to the bill. Then with regards to the question of making further amendments, and this is with regards to the breaches of the code and the option of a counsellor reporting the breach of the code, I just would firstly, before I turn to whether the committee can make the amendment, I think Rinaldi Best has also touched on this. This is Rule 311(2) of the rules, Rule Section 76 of the Constitution, but I would just like to point the committee to Subsection 5 of Item 15 in the Code, which provides that if the Speaker of the Council is the alleged perpetrator, or the Speaker refuses to authorize an investigation, the Council must establish a special committee. So Sub 5 was added, my memory serves me today, it was added in the NA Portfolio Committee the first time around, and the session. So it opens up there. And then as Dr. Naidoo has pointed out, yes, Rule 311 is quite specific. It says that, you know, we are restricted to the NCLT amendment, and we may not make further amendments to the bill, but if something is rejected, then we would have to follow the mediation process. I thank you, Chair. I'm guided by the committee.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Abrahams from the Commission. Is there anything you want to say?
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I think that I'm covered by the responses to the comments by the Honourable Members. But if I could be allowed also just to express my thanks to the members, to yourself, Chairperson, as obviously as well as the department. We've now gone through, as I said, 5-6 years, and I just counted during this period since we initiated this, I think we had about 4 elections, and for each election, we had amendments to the various election-related legislation, except for the Municipal Structures Act. But I understand the dynamics of the Municipal Structures Act, because not only does it deal with electoral-related matters, it's also a governance issue, and specifically that space, a lot has been happening. And we've had the patience with a full understanding as to, you know, why we've had this this long process. But suffice to say, as I've mentioned earlier, the election is on our doorstep, and we look forward to embracing the amendments as we approach and go into this election. And it will definitely assist us with in the general elections, as well as the next term of by-elections, with the challenges that we've had in the past. So thank you very much once again.
Thank you so much. Honorable Brink, your hand is up, or you have put it down now. I thought it's a follow-up.
Chair, no, I just wanted to pick up on what Honorable Groenewald has said, and it was partially answered, but perhaps let's just be more explicit that as the code stands, it is quite clear that if a speaker of a municipal council on reasonable suspicion is of the opinion that a provision of the code has been breached, they must take certain actions. Nothing precludes a councillor from bringing to the attention of the speaker breaches, and as the rules currently stand, if this information is presented before a speaker, they are compelled to act. And there is a reasonableness standard that is applied, and that is to be regarded with the provisions mentioned by the law advisor when the speaker refuses to investigate breaches of the code. So maybe if we can just get a clear confirmation that that is in fact the case, that at present, as the situation stands, nothing prevents a councillor from reporting, and if that information meets the reasonable standard set in the code, then the speaker must investigate. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much. Dr. Naidoo, you want to comment on the issue as raised by
Chairperson?
Also Honorable Groenewald is good to follow up. Yes?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, unfortunately, I can't put my hand up on the screen, so I have to use my camera to put my hand up. I've listened to what the law advisor said as well, but the practical side in municipalities is it is actually happening, and then there's no recourse for councillors that actually went and laid a charge at the speaker. So if then it can be addressed by a circular from the department and set out clear, it would be suitable for me as well. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. The comment on the two issues that are raised by the colleagues.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. So look, I think this is a matter of interpretation. You know, when one reads item 15.5 together with 16.1b, and the response from the lawyers is that the drafting of 15.5 was to do exactly that, to keep the door open in the instances where councillors, not the speaker, wants to bring a matter of a breach of the code, you know, for attention or investigation. So that would be my response, firstly. But secondly, if it is unclear, you know, and within the confines of what the code of conduct provides presently, we could also, as part of our implementation circular that I've mentioned earlier, you know, clarify that if indeed it would mean that the ordinary councillor can also then deal with matters of the breach of the code, or bring it to the attention of the council, as has been mentioned by Honourable Brink and Kronenbalg. But that would be my response, Chair, unless the state law advisor wants to add to what has been said previously. Thank you.
State law advisor, do you want to add something?
No, Chair, I fully understand what Kevin has just said, what Dr. Naido has just said, as well as the Honourable Kronenbalg. It makes sense that it is clarified in a further departmental circular, the implementation circular that Dr. Naido has made reference to. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members.
I think this is bringing us towards the end of our deliberation on all these matters. And then I've got a note from Honorable Brink. To say that he's saying he will support this matter to be clarified in the circular. And he's saying that it has to be done very strongly. So that's the matter that if you have committed to do that, then that's what it's saying. Under the circumstances, can I see a mover for the adoption for the amendments as done by the colleagues in the NCOP? Also with the view that is canvassed by Honorable Brink for us to close that matter. Can I get a mover and the seconder? Colleagues, members of parliament, members of the committee, I'm waiting for hands. Mover and seconder. I raise my hand, Chair. You are moving for the adoption of the recommendations with the proposal raised by Honorable Brink. Can I get a seconder to that? Honorable Kawa moves for the adoption. Can I get a seconder, please?
I'll second, Chair.
Honorable Kronenbalg seconded the proposed amendment. Thank you so much, colleagues, on this matter. Shirin, are we able? Oh, there were questions that Honorable Feza raised with the DG of Traditional Affairs and the team. For the benefit, if he didn't send all of them to the committee group. The first question was that what role is the traditional council playing in terms of the acknowledgement of the well-known traditional surgeons and caregivers in terms of ensuring that the provincial departments have legitimate information? The second one
there is a difference between a caregiver in Kankata and the traditional surgeon in Kimbi. Did the bill consider that? And then the other one, also on the traditional initiation bill, is there any involvement of the medical doctors in the imparting of the skills for initiation? And then the other one, he needs clarity with regard, the first concern to him is with regard to slide 4.13, where the department says that the seasons may not interfere or overlap with official terms. Can you get clarity on that? Secondly, slide 16B, I think he was referring to clauses, it's not slide 13.4.13 and clauses 16B, which talks about the 15-year imprisonment for holding non-registered schools. Why doesn't it also speak to the consequence to those whose initiatives will have died under their care? Can you respond to those concerns, DG and Mr. Bester and the team? Over to you, DG of COPTA, DGA, sorry.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. And thank you to Honorable Gessa for those questions that have been raised. I think maybe let me just deal with the questions, starting with the one that the chairperson has raised last, and then go to the other. So the first one is about where we're talking about the initiation seasons, that they may not interfere or overlap with official school terms. That's what the bill says and what the slide says, that they shouldn't overlap with official school terms. And the idea here is to make sure that you don't have the kids missing out in terms of their schooling because there's a clash between the initiation season and the school term. And that's what that provision is about. So it basically means that there has to be careful examination of what the school calendar says and make sure that the initiation season itself takes the school calendar into consideration, because you want kids to be in school and not be taken out of school to undergo cultural initiation. So that's what that tries to deal with here. And the second one that deals with imprisonment, the Honorable Professor is correct. What we were advised here is that once there is a death case, it's no longer a matter of the Customary Initiation Act, but it's a matter that gets dealt with through other legislative provisions, such as the Criminal Procedures Act and so on and so on. So it cannot be this act that then ends up dealing with an issue involving death, because that has been provided for already in terms of the criminal justice system of the country. And therefore, the act would be going outside its scope if it then began to deal with what happens in terms of sentencing and fines when there is a death involved. So that's why it's not mentioned in this bill. Honorable Gessa also says there's a difference between a caregiver and a
traditional. But DG, you're allowed to cross-reference that particular criminal act. You could have done that. Because you leave it. Remember when we engaged with the CRL Rights Commission? There's been a lot of criminal acts that has been happening in the church thing. And they will argue that it's a criminal act, but you'll find that the police then wouldn't deal with those matters, because there's no act that expressly and explicitly deal with these matters as well. So I think when we legislate, we must be able to also deal with this matter so that we don't create a vacuum. Because that cross-referencing, the legal advisors and those who drafted, they could have said that. I think that's the spirit within what Honorable Kessa was raising this matter. Because I'll ask you which part of the Criminal Procedure Act that you are referring to, as you are saying that. Are you able to tell me now, or tell the committee now? Yes.
The point is taken, Honourable Chair. I'm just giving the Criminal Procedures Act as an example, that the advice we got was that because even now, where people, there has been deaths of initiates, there are cases that get opened, police investigate, and so on. And so the view was that leave that process to proceed as is. But the point is taken in terms of cross-referencing, Honourable Chair, and we stand advised on that as this process gets taken forward. But I think that's
can we also agree? Maybe you can do it in the form of the regulations or circular, as Honourable Brink has proposed on the other, because we cannot legislate now and leave the vacuum, and then we'll have consequences later. Can we agree that you're going to do that?
I agree, Chairperson, that we'll look into a suitable mechanism to use, whether it's regulations or a circular, so that the link is created. That point is taken. Then if I may proceed, Honourable Chair, there is a question raised about the difference between a caregiver and a traditional surgeon. And the professor says, did this bill consider that there's a difference? Indeed, it did. So if you look at the bill on the section that deals with definitions, a caregiver and a traditional surgeon are listed and defined separately, and taking cognizance of the fact that this indeed, as Honourable Professor says, they are different. Even in Chapter 3, when it talks about roles, responsibilities of role players, the section that deals with caregivers is separate from the section that deals with traditional surgeons, because it is recognized that these two are different role players, and the roles are listed in the Act. As and the bill as roles that are different. So Chapter 3 of the bill deals with that. Then there is also a question about the role of the traditional counsel in terms of acknowledgement of the well-known traditional surgeons and caregivers in terms of ensuring provincial departments have legitimate information. Again, yes, there's a role of traditional leaders who oversee the traditional council. So there's a section, section 20, I think, in Chapter 3, that lists this roles and responsibilities. And of course, there's a very clear reference to a role that they have to play when it comes to traditional surgeons themselves. So, for example, the section talks about them assisting in the screening of the traditional surgeons, because there's recognition that they will know this traditional surgeon and will be able to assist with the screening prior the initiation sessions and the registration of the traditional surgeons. So that is also in Chapter 3 of the bill. There is also a question that asks about another set of role players, and it says, is there involvement of medical doctors in imparting of the skills of initiation? Again, Chapter 3 talks about medical doctors and the role they play. So they can play a role in terms of the actual initiation itself, or in terms of the supervision of traditional surgeons. And so there is a particular section, section 24, that lists that set of responsibilities of medical practitioners to make sure that they also play a role, either in terms of conducting the actual initiation itself or the supervision that is required. I think those are the questions, Honourable Chair, that the Honourable Professor has raised. Thanks.
Thank you, DG. Is Mr. Besser, do you want to say, add something on what the DG has said?
Okay, thank you very much. I was looking for the option to raise my hand, but I couldn't find it anyway.
Then what are you doing now? Showing your face to me.
Yes. DJ has captured everything correctly and very well. I just wanted to say the issue that you raised, Chair, about the reference to other legislation. The offences clause is clause 33, and then it deals with all the different offences that can be their transgressions in terms of this particular bill, things that are not covered in other laws. But then subsection 6, if I may just read it very briefly, and I won't read the whole one, but it says that any alleged offence relating to, for example, the death of an initiate or kidnapping or the abuse of initiates, etc., must be dealt with in terms of the offence clauses of the provided for in the Criminal Procedure Act, the Children's Act, the Health Professions Act, the Drugs and Drug Trafficking Act, or the Liquor Act, as the case may be. So in that sub-clause 6 is the cross-reference to these particular laws that specifically deal with matters like the death or adoption. Thanks, Jay.
Okay, thanks for that clarity. It's much appreciated. Okay. So I think we have done and addressed, he's talking to me, he's happy, so it doesn't deter our earlier adoption of the matters. And then I did a mistake earlier. I didn't acknowledge the presence of a Majesty Queen Khomo from the Khoisan community in the Western Cape. She's also here in our midst. I've seen that when I was acknowledging the participants of the meeting, I think we should have done that also. You're welcome, and we sincerely appreciate your support and interest for the work of this committee. It's much appreciated. You are welcome, Your Majesty. Okay. Shirin, can we then load the minutes? I think we can release those other presenters that are non-members of the committee so that we continue to deal with the minutes. We can release also the DGs, as long as they are PLOs and those who are parliamentary liaison remain in the meeting for them to be able to, the minutes will still be heard, but those ones that they must remain in the meeting. I'm doing so that I understand that there's work that you still have to do. Thank you so much, non-members of the committee. You are excused. We want to deal with the internal arrangement of the committee. Thank you for attending, all of you. State Law Advisor, DCOC, DTA, led by their respective DGs. Thank you so much. And our colleague from the IEC, Mr. Abrahams, we sincerely appreciate your attendance of this meeting. You can leave quietly. I know that you know how to do it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Leave quietly.
Thank you.
Leave quietly, DG. Leave quietly, Mr. Bestel. Leave quietly. Okay, colleague. The first, how many sets of minutes are we going to consider today? Remember that night you wanted that it was a lot. How many are there? Colleagues, this was shared with you in November, December, before we went for recess. Shirin, how many are they? Shirin?
I'm just counting quickly, Chairperson. It looked like 26 sets, Chairperson.
My apologies. I thought I was on mute. I was saying what matters is the attendance and the recommendation and the resolution of the committee. Can we push up this minute hearing so that we see the colleagues who were there, maybe those that were not there? Yes, this is what we are seeing. The colleagues who were there. I forgot when I introduced the two colleagues from the DA that Honorable Opperman has also been discharged out of this committee, but we are dealing with the minutes of the previous terms. Okay. Then go down. The editing, we've done that. You still do that because you must click the ignore all icon, Shirin, because you can do it later. And okay. These are the minutes. Our resolution was that the committee will, the municipality will finish the municipality with the report on overtime. Did we get that? Shirin? It's our capacity to follow up on the matters because this matter was dealt with on the 3rd of September. Ne? So if not, you need to follow up on this matter. So is there any other thing that you want to raise, colleagues? If none, can I get a mover and a seconder for the adoption of this minute? It's quiet. What's going on?
I move for the adoption, Chair, Ms. Kaba.
The record, Chair, I second.
Follow up on the resolutions. Eh? Can we also have the resolution register moving forward, Shirin? So that at the end of each and every committee meeting, or we can do it every second week to check how are we progressing in terms of our resolution. We must develop a resolution register for all our meetings. Agreed to. Can we get to the next set of the minutes? Shirin, 20 October. Those are the people who, colleagues who were in the meeting. Okay. The resolutions are there. They owe us this one on the progress and on the implementation of the, so they are there. Cooperative governance. And then, yes, so these resolutions, they are there. You'll just put them in the resolution register, as I've indicated, Shirin, and then you'll be able to report the progress we are making. And then can I get a mover and a seconder for this minute, set of minutes? Can I get a mover and a seconder for this set of minutes?
Yes. The record, I move.
The record moves for the adoption. Can I get a seconder?
Chair, Kaba second.
Okaba second. Agreed to. Next set of minutes. Ma'am, please mute your microphone. We can hear the people at the background.
Sorry, Chair, I was listening to the lady, man.
You can't listen to the lady and you're in the meeting. You can't do that. That's ill discipline. We're in a meeting, please. 21st of October 2020, it was deliberation on the local government municipal systems amendment bill. And these are the colleagues that were in the meeting. Then let's go to the resolutions of the committee. Resolutions are there. The follow-up meeting with Gauteng Provincial Government, I think it's long overdue, having had all these PPE scandals as well. And then also the follow-up with the NYSNA municipality on the implementation of the recommendations. Then the meeting agenda. Can I get a mover in the second half of this set of the minutes? We've already agreed that Shirini will do a resolution register and make sure that those items that we have resolved, they must see their way. If they're not in the current term, first quarter term agenda, they must feature strongly in the second term agenda. The beauty with Zoom meetings, Shirini, we can schedule even meetings. You can expand the program. You also meet in the evening so that we make sure that all our matters are dealt with expeditiously. Mover, seconder.
Direko moves, Chair.
Honorable Direko moves, seconder.
I'll second, Chair.
It's Honorable Brink, ne? Seconding. Thank you so much, colleagues. Next set of minutes. The minutes of the deliberations on the Local Government Municipal Systems Act. And then this one is... When the bill was adopted, Honorable Direko was following the responses on those participants in social media. There's been a lot of unhappiness, but I think this is the bill that we can all touch ourselves in our backs to say if we indeed want to professionalize local government. That was the have decisions with which we all had to take, and we unanimously agreed on this one. Thank you so much, colleagues. Can I get a mover in the second of this? After all, the committee report was also adopted, and the bill was finally adopted by the NA. Mover and second.
Thank you. Move.
She's withdrawn. Who was moving?
I'm happy to second.
Okay. Kawa moves. Bring second. Thank you, colleagues. Next set of minutes. Set of minutes. This one, I am having a honorable pleasure on the call. This is the one that you are moving for adoption, honorable pleasure. He's in the meeting, but it's like we can't hear him. He's saying yes, he's moving. For the adoption of this set of minutes of the 27th of October, Honorable Kaiser. And then can I get a seconder? He wants to be counted. No.
I second, Chair.
Yeah, no network challenges formed against Honorable Kleza shall prosper. You all see that he's moving in the committee group, and then you've seconded Honorable Kava. Yes, the minutes are adopted. Thank you, colleagues. Then let's get the next set of minutes. Yes, colleagues who were there, who were meeting the West Rand District Municipality. Resolutions. Yes, that's where we are. If there are matters that you need to follow up and also deal with the matters that need to come on your resolution register, these are the matters. Can I get a mover and a seconder for the adoption of these minutes?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Kava, move. Any seconder? Any seconder, colleagues?
Chair, I second is Direko.
Thank you, Honorable Direko. The minutes are thus adopted as moved by Honorable Kava, seconded by Honorable Direko. Next set of minutes, Sharon, please. These are the minutes of the 10th of November. Then can I get a mover? The people who were there first, they were briefing by the South African Local Government Association on its annual financial report. Those are the members who were present. Then the resolutions. This is very critical, especially the first bulletin. We are legislators, and this is why we are here. I think this is the matter we need to push with SALDA and prioritize. It's long overdue. You remember the white paper on local government has been there since 1998. Can I get the mover and the seconder of this minutes? Mover and seconder?
I move, Chair.
It's Direko. I second Honorable Kava.
Honorable Kava moved. Direko and Kleza seconded. Thank you. Can we get a 10-minute comfort break, please? We should be back at 22 minutes, past. Shirin will be loading the next one. 10 minutes comfort break, please, colleagues. Thank you for agreeing, Honorable Brink. 10 minutes comfort break.